Welcome to Interleaved, where we take a deep dive into topics from the Daf Yomi with modern-day sages of the Torah and the world. I'm Natan Alzalos-Pale. On today's episode, tying together the tractate with the tireless people who tie together our communities. Learners who have completed Masechet Eruvin in all of its grueling intricacy, with all of its tangles of wire and wood and neighborhood drama, might be surprised to realize that it doesn't actually have that much to do with the invisible wire above our heads. In fact, modern Eruvin draw much of their legitimacy from creative readings of just a handful of passages strung throughout the tractate. But as we've heard all season from our experts, while the world described in the texts we study may look different, some of the same feelings and intentionalities have remained throughout the centuries. Perhaps none of these feelings are as strong as the feeling of community engendered by the experience of living within the Eruv, a sacred space made sacred by the very act of building community itself. And perhaps no one knows these feelings as intimately as the people who build, check, and fix our Eruvin every week so we can experience Shabbat as we are meant to, together. We dedicate this episode to these generous Jews who dedicate their time and effort to the sometimes thankless job, because you all deserve unending gratitude. Listener, welcome to the podcast.
My name's Jonathan Gradman. I'm the director of the Center City Eruv Corporation, and our job is to maintain the Eruv in Center City, Philadelphia. Actually, now it's expanded to South Philly, but the downtown Eruv, let's say. We moved here in 2009, and the next year I started getting involved checking the Eruv. I had a few friends that were signing up also, you know, and we took turns checking Washington Avenue, which was the old southern boundary. I had checked Eruv before, like at a summer camp, but I'd never checked a city Eruv. But, you know, you go with someone and they train you how to do it, what you have to look for, learning some of the laws about how an Eruv is constructed, what makes it kosher, what makes it invalid. So I started that way. And through the years, a friend of mine, who's my chavrusa, became the director of the Eruv, and he moved to Chicago. This is a while ago, it was maybe 8 years ago. And he was like, look, you're the last person here that's going to do it right now. You got to do it. So I said, okay. So I took it on, and that's how I first got involved with the Eruv. It was a wild ride at the beginning, because initially, it was maybe a month after I agreed to take on the Eruv, I got a letter from the IRS that we were losing our 501c3 status, you know, as a tax deductible donation kind of thing. And I was like, what is this? I mean, I didn't know anything about the Eruv's finances. I didn't think about setting up the Eruv. I was just trying to coordinate a checking schedule. What did I know about any of this stuff? So I consulted some people, and apparently something having nothing to do with me, maybe 8 years before I even moved to Philly, someone had filed some paperwork incorrectly. So the $10,000 that someone initially gave to the Eruv to just get them started was accidentally recorded as income instead of a donation. So the IRS audited us, and so it took me, I don't know, a year and a half to get the status back. I got us a great accounting firm to help us out. And basically we had to get people to give to the Eruv so we would have enough money to pay the rabbi. And then people said, you know, I don't want to give because I'm not going to get my tax exempt. So we ran out of money. Then I had to delay paying him. I felt terrible about Rabbi Shmirla, who helps us fix the Eruv. And we have him do construction projects for us and things like that. So, you know, he just didn't check the Eruv for a long time. We were doing it ourselves. And, you know, it was a rough time. But then we got the status back and we raised some money. I did a couple appeals. You know, I basically begged people to give us some money, and we paid him back. And then he still works with us. He's a very, very holy guy. He's very attentive to our needs, and he appreciates the difficulty that it is to manage an Eruv. He works with a lot of different Eruv, and he said that you're not the only person this has happened to, et cetera. And from there, we just kind of started building infrastructure and people so that the checking wasn't so burdensome. When I first started, there were maybe 4 or 5 people checking the whole thing. And now we have, I think the southern route has 5 or 6 people, and the northern route has 8 people almost. We're training up to 8 people. So now, you know, you only have to check once every 2 months or something. It's a lot easier now. So that's how I got started with it. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And then, you know, a few years in, people said, oh, you know, people are starting to move south of Washington. We got to move the Arup south. So I said, okay, what is that going to take? So we started mapping the route and, you know, we did that for a while and then we didn't have any money for it. So we never actually built it. I put the plans in a folder in my closet and said, eventually we're going to come back to this. And then about 2 years ago, Rabbanit Dasi Fruchter reached out to me to say, oh, you know, I'm setting up a shtiebel in South Philly. And there's people moving to Philly that need to carry and they have kids. And so I said, that's great. It's just, we don't have any money. We've been trying to do this for years. So she said, if I can get you the money, can we do it? So I said, sure. So that's what we did. So I got the plans ready. I called the city. They said, oh, you got to get your charter fixed in city council. That's going to take 6 months. So that took 6 months. And then you have to get a new kind of insurance. So I had to reach out to the insurance company. That took 5 months. Just everything always takes a lot longer than you expect. It's funny. I learned in Masechet Eruvin on Daf Yud Gimel, it says, if you push the hour pushes you. The Gemara means is if you try to force the time that it's going to take to accomplish a task, it's not going to work out. You have to wait for it to be the time to do the task. So that gave me a lot of encouragement. You know, I relied on that a lot over the course of the last few years. But Baruch Hashem, by Rosh Hashanah, we had everything up. So it's been a wild ride. It's really interesting. Like for this, Eruv is really like a place where in halacha where rubber meets the road. Because if it doesn't actually work in real life, then you can think of whatever you want, but the Eruv doesn't count. It actually has to work in the real world. Like a very interesting way to see how halacha actually plays out in time and space. It's really something else. I mean, Eruv maintenance is like a whole topic and people don't realize how hard it is to keep the Eruv up. It really requires dedication from the community to assess every week carefully to see, am I comfortable telling all the Jews that live in downtown Philadelphia that they're allowed to carry right? And it's not just about being a big responsibility, but it requires a lot of work and a lot of knowledge to even understand what the requirements are that this is called an Eruv today. So it's a big operation. It's not easy. It's really not easy. We do it because we really care about community, because the word Eruv means to mix together. That's what it means. Like in Kashrus, Jewish dietary laws, we say Teruva. It's for the same root. It means like if two foods mix together in a pot, that's called Teruva. Eruv is a more basic form of that same thing. It's like, it doesn't mean someone else mixed it together. It means the area is mixed. It's all one thing. So that's the goal of an Eruv, is to create one shared space for all the Jews in the whole city to come together and be able to carry to each other's houses and to treat the physical space differently on this day. It's not my house and your house. We're all living in the same shared space. So the only reason that the Eruv stays up is because people really care about that concept. And I think that concept, even if you're not keeping all the technical laws of the Sabbath every week, that concept, conceptually, people get it. People understand that the sages wanted the Jewish people to come together because A, the laws are complicated in terms of carrying. That's like two giant volumes of the Gemara are all about carrying things, basically. And the sages didn't want you to be so scared about carrying that you're going to sit in your house all day. They didn't want that. They wanted you to think about this and come up with a shared solution. It all goes hand in hand. I think the maintenance part is like, it's a detail, but it's a very important detail, because if you don't stay on top of it, then you don't have the shared space. There's a story I'll tell you, which was a few years ago. The Eruv was down. It was in December. There was a big snowstorm and a significant portion of the Eruv was damaged. So I called Rabbi Shmirla. He said, look, all the Eruvim in the whole Northeast Corridor are down. And he lives in Lakewood. He had to drive to Baltimore. He had to drive to the main line. He had to drive all, you know, the Philadelphia suburbs. He had to drive all over the place. And he said, look, I can get some of it up, but I can't get the whole thing up this week. So I said, okay, we're just going to call it down and you start, you know, putting things together. And hopefully next week we'll get it back up. If we don't get it back up next week, we'll get it back up the next week. So in the meantime, someone in our shul had a baby boy and the bris was on Shabbos. So he calls me on Sunday and he says, look, we just had a baby yesterday, but I know the Eruv was down. What's going on with the Eruv? I said, look, I can't guarantee you that the Eruv is going to be up, because I can't. So he said, look, I don't have any way to get the baby to the shoal. It's too much to have people at my house. I have a small, so we went on and on. I felt really bad for the guy. You know, he's a close friend of mine. So I said, let me see what I can do. So I started calling people. So he gave me the number of Rabbi Gore, but he lives in Cherry Hill. He's very involved with Eruv people, and he knows a lot of people that run Eruvs. And so I called him. He said, I know one guy in Baltimore that might be able to come up. Okay, so he gives me his number. So I call him. He gives me his rate. You know, he's going to charge me also for travel time. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, let me think about it. But, you know, I only have one day to think about it because otherwise it's not going to get up. So I call him. I call Rabbi Shmirel. I worked out, you know, one's going to do this portion and one's going to do that portion and we're going to get it done on different days. And so long story short, we brought the guy in from Baltimore and he did about 80% of the work. And Rabbi Shmirel was able to come in Friday morning and finish it. So the Eruv was up. So right before I called it up, I said, you know, we have, I don't know, X number of dollars in the bank account. And like, this was going to basically be all the money. This is what it is. You know, we're going to have to do an appeal next year. So I paid everybody. And then like 5 minutes after I called it up, these people that had moved away that I hadn't talked to in a while, randomly gave me a donation. It's not random, but from a cosmic perspective, they gave me a donation for the exact amount that I needed to pay these people. So it was just like really surreal moment to see the amount of work we had to do to get all of this to work, but just like the payback in such a real time. Like literally I just paid them, like I just sent the checks out and then I saw on my phone, you know, someone's giving you a $2,000 donation. I was like, this is crazy. So it makes me appreciate that Shabbat is not only about, you know, we say God created the world in 6 days and he rested on the seventh, so now we have to keep Shabbat. Well, what does it have to do with carrying, you know? But I think what it means is that not only did God create all the things in the world that we have to use, but he created the world itself. He created the space. So the other side of the Sabbath is the consecration of space. And I think that that really comes to light with Eruvin, with the laws of Eruv. So that I think that's what makes me appreciate it. You know, it's my hope, my prayer that as time continues and even today that more Jews will start thinking about, you know, coming together and being together and learning that concept from this, from Shabbos. And it's not, and that concept isn't specific to Shabbos, but it's a point that helps you understand it for your whole life.
My name is Michael Calderoff. I'm 21. I'm a senior at Binghamton University. I'm the president of the Chabad here, and I'm also one of the Eruv executives. So we sort of oversee the whole Eruv checking process, making sure it's up every Shabbos. The Eruv is, I think, 7.5 miles long. That number is like thrown around, but I think it's around there. And because it's so long, we split it up into 6 sections. So there's groups for each section of maybe about 4 to 6 people, a couple drivers thrown in there, people with cars, so that you can drive certain portions of the Eruv that are just too long to walk and you're able to drive. And when you're placed in that group, you're in a group chat and the executive every single week will just say who's good to check this week. And you go out on a Thursday or Friday and you check. It takes about 20 minutes, 30 minutes a week. The whole 7.5 miles, there's many different types of Eruv features. So you need to check if the poles of the Eruvs, the lechis are up. You need to check that the wire that goes above the lechis is also up and not, you know, cut anywhere or down or off the lechi, off the top of the lechi. And other features of the Eruv, there's actually a natural Eruv, meaning that, for example, I can think of an example in one section that I've checked a lot. There's actually a physical slope in the ground. So there was actually no need for any man-made Eruv in that spot because the slope is large enough to be considered an Eruv. So basically all these different features, like if there's a fence feature of an Eruv in a certain section, you need to make sure the fence is up and basically need to make sure that all the different parts of the Eruv are up and create one continuous loop around the entire community so that the whole Eruv is considered kosher. While I'm checking the Eruv, I sort of get an appreciation more for the community we have because the whole point of the Eruv is it's creating sort of this private domain, this community. It's sort of bringing everyone into one place and circling everyone. So I guess that's a way it's think differently about the community. And I guess what I do for the community and what I allow others to give back to the community by being able to check. It changed my thinking of like the symbolism of the Eruv is like creating a community. So I guess it's changed that way of thinking for me, not necessarily only on Shabbat, but like my thought of going into college was definitely not that I was going to be checking an Aruv every week. But when I was a freshman, I first started checking the Aruv, I'd say just because it's a new experience. Like, I like learning. I was curious about what it involved, so I started it. But then after that, I realized, like I said before, how important it is for the community and how I viewed it as just sort of bring the community as one, bring them into one. And I just kept getting involved, mostly for the just aspect of giving back to the community. Like, that's just been my nature to be there for everyone.
My name's Rebecca Nathan. I'm originally from Lawrence, New York, and I went to the University of Pennsylvania for college. And during my time there for about a year, I was the president of University City Aruv Corporation. So basically coordinated the Aruv checking and anything that had to go on for the Aruv. You know, it's amazing because, you know, in the small community, everyone knows each other, and we would have our Aruv email that we sent out every Aruv Shabbos, and we would highlight the checkers. Someone started of sending out like a selfie from someone on their check, which I thought was really amazing, just to highlight like the work that people are doing and the effort. And I remember, like, you know, you're out in like the rain sometime, cold, but yeah, there's just a lot. When I got to Penn, I had just fallen in love with the Orthodox community there called the OCP, Orthodox community at Penn. And I found myself involved with a lot of things there. I was a mashgiach volunteer, and I helped out with a lot of different programs, but I was not an Aruv checker. And then I guess just because I was so involved, I was like, why am I not an Aruv checker? So my sophomore year, I participated in the training that happens usually at the beginning of the year for the freshmen. So I only became an Aruv checker my sophomore year, but yeah, it was basically divided into six sections, and there was a few people who were trained on each section, and I just had my section, loved it. You know, you feel really like connected to your section. And then when the president then was ready to pass it over, he asked me to take it over, which was exciting. I think he kind of sold it also as I would be like the first female president. I remember reading an article once about how like Aruv is really like a women's issue. And it's such a feminist issue because, you know, when there is no Aruv, who are the ones not going out? It's the women with their children. I just thought it was a really cool experience. You know, I grew up in the five towns where they don't, it's a pretty large Orthodox community, if you're not familiar with it. So, you know, being part of a community that really like needed everyone to make it run was really cool. I think that's what I thought was like so amazing, just an experience that I never thought I'd have. I was probably amazed by like how much you could do with duct tape. Really just, yeah, I would just bring my duct tape and you'd like just like scrap together all those like lechis and everything. But yeah, it was just like a fun thing to learn. I think it's amazing to be really intentional about one, like your Judaism, but also about community. I think that was something that I really gained at Penn, again, from like growing up in a Jewish community with so many people. You know, being at Penn really made me appreciate what it took. And then that kind of also just relates to my experience with the Aruv. You know, I never thought about it, never thought for a second, you know, growing up, like, oh, maybe it's down this week or something like that. And now this isn't even limited to Shabbat, but I just like see it everywhere I go. Like once I kind of like learned about it, learned what it looks like, I just like see it everywhere. I'll go on a walk on Shabbat and be like, oh, guess we're at the Aruv, or like just driving, you know, back to Queens. I'm like, there it is. Whatever, just like wherever I am, they just kind of like pop up and I feel like I can't not see it. Yeah, I think it's just, it makes you appreciate, you know, all the effort and everything that these things take to make your experience more pleasurable.
I'm Joshua Skutsky, longtime Aruv user, a relatively new time Aruv checker. It was over the summer in my neighborhood, we got a call, you know, probably related to the coronavirus, that like some longtime members of our community were moving out and they were worried the roster of Aruv checkers was getting a little thin. So I was like, well, you know, how about I get trained as an Aruv checker? So I'd say there are two parts of being an Aruv checker. Like one of them is like, there's all this like halacha stuff to know, like theoretical Shulchan Aruch stuff. But then there's this whole like practical knowing what to look for. And I think related to that, you know, for me, it was like an awareness of like, you're walking around and you have to have this awareness of like the wall of the supermarket, like is the Eruv? And you have to like know, like, okay, like this side is inside and this side is outside. Otherwise it'll get mixed up and you won't really realize like what's happening or what's going on. At some of those early Eruv walks, I was like losing track of like what was supposed to be what and what direction things really were. The Washington Heights Eruv is not particularly large as Eruvin go, but you know, still we have like, there are a lot of parts to it. And we have like a printout that with all the poles and like features of the Eruv have numbers. So you can like look, check a sheet to like see like, oh, like pole number 21 is supposed to be, a, you know, the corner of like, let's say 181st and Audubon, whatever. And so like all the features like line up to this like detailed lookup sheet, and that helps keep everything straight. Couldn't really imagine checking an Eruv without that kind of resource. But that's also how you get consistency like week to week between different people checking the Eruv. I say like if I check the Eruv 1 week, someone else will check the next week. And like we're not looking for different things or in our own versions of the Eruv. Hopefully we're like meeting up being like, oh, okay, this is supposed to be here. So like some of what we find and like we email each other and we WhatsApp people, a lot of what we find is like, oh, like it says in the sheet this, but really like this is what I found. And it's like, oh, okay, like still kosher. It's not like what we thought it was supposed to be. That's most of what we find. You know, sometimes it's not kosher. And if it's not kosher, then we call in our Eruv expert or we make a shotgun to like go in and make the necessary repairs. I think we have a very, very good track record of going into Shabbat, it's kosher. But yeah, checking it Thursday night, Friday morning, sometimes we find stuff that maybe needs to be fixed. I remember once Thursday night, people found something that was like for sure not kosher. And I just went out like Friday morning and I found just like looking around that like, yeah, let's say like pole 31, totally not kosher. But like from pole 29, you could actually go to like the buildings and then you'll go to like a backup pole 31 and that'll connect to pole 32. And then like, so actually the Eruv is okay. Like there's the section that isn't like what we thought it was, but they're backups and it's still okay, but like we want to fix it. So sometimes stuff like that happens. The ideal Eruv checker is not like someone who can like, you know, whip out like, oh, I think it's okay for like these detailed logic reasons. You want someone who can be like, oh, this pole is here or isn't here, or this wire isn't going over this pole. Like that kind of consistency and by the bookness is what you're looking for. The first time I was checking the Eruv like on my own, I met up 189th and Wadsworth. I met up with Jonathan Schwab and he was checking the YU Eruv. Told me that like, he's like, look, I've been checking the YU Eruv for like years now. I've never met up with the Mount Sinai Eruv. We both had the same thought like, oh, Thursday morning, 8 a.m., let's go check the Eruv and just get it done with. And so like, boom, we met up. So that was fun. And there is a part of the Eruv for the Mount Sinai side that depends on the YU side. It's actually very close to where we met up. So it's not just two Eruvs together. It's, you know, there is a bit of like mutuality and we support each other. But the end result is you can carry from the YU side of the Heights to all these places. In part of like Eruv engineering, you want to make it so that like if a part of the Eruv went down, like the Eruv would still be okay. So like I was actually on an Eruv walk a long time ago, just like see the YU Eruv. It wasn't to like learn how to check the YU, just to like get a sense of like, what is this? What's going on? And so a part of the YU Eruv was down on this Eruv walk on Shabbat, high stakes. And so like, so actually like people were like dropping their keys or whatever. And then very quickly, you know, the YU Rosh Yeshiva, they were like, oh, but you know what, wait a second. Like, yeah, this is down, but the Mount Sinai Eruv is over here and goes from here to there. So actually we're okay. We're included in there. Just because one thing fails, the whole thing doesn't have to fail. It's like how they tried to build the Titanic that didn't quite work. So you build your Eruv in so they don't like sink when they hit an iceberg. Yeah, you want to have like a fault tolerant system. When we finished Masechet Eruvin, we had a shear from Rabbi Micah Shotkin. And he's like the guy who, when there is a problem, he comes in with his cherry picker and fixes it. He either like gets the wires up, and he also like has these methods of like tying the wires to the tops of the poles in a way that's both like secure and like halachic. And so it's like this world of like halachic engineering where like you need to deal with all this real practical concerns, like how do you keep a wire up there? And there are all these like details that like, okay, like, you know, knowing that like there are these theoretical opinions, how can we satisfy all of them? And then if we can't satisfy all of them, how do we like ask a Shiloh, like a real POSEC, to figure out like, okay, like what can we do given these like, the fact that like, just given like the physical reality, we can't satisfy all the halachic opinions, how do we build a kosher Eruv in that situation? I don't know, what do I wish people knew about Eruv maintenance? I mean, look, it's thankless until you do it once. And then you realize, oh, this is what it takes. I really feel Hakaradak Tov to whoever did it this week. You know, it's almost similar to like, I'm sure people always feel good about getting invited somewhere in Shabbat, but like once you like actually host a Shabbat meal and you realize that like, oh, you have to like set up and host and clean and take out the trash after Shabbat. So you realize there are all these parts to it. Then you start feeling like real Hakaradak Tov to the people that like actually do it. So yeah, the fact that it's not like an exclusive thing, like I'm pretty sure anyone who wants to can go on an Eruv walk, you know, with me or with anyone else, and we'll be like, hey, this is how you check the Eruv, and then boom, you'll be part of the group of people who check the Eruv, and then you'll realize like what it really takes. Like it's not a closed committee. It's not like something that gets done behind the scenes. Like, you know, anyone can join our ranks. And anyone can get a good sense of like what it really takes. On a communal level, there are many things that happen in a shul, in a community that, let's say, everyone benefits from or many people benefit from. Like if there's a kiddush, there are people who set up the kiddush. My like big picture takeaway is that like for these things that happen, there are all these like individual people who make it happen. So even if it's a little bit behind the scenes, like, you know, you should realize that no, like, there was someone who took an hour or 2 hours of their day to like walk the Eruv, check all the wires, and then that has the results of, you know, how do you count the number of Jews who benefit from the Eruv just in our neighborhood? I don't know. You know, more than 1,000 people, for sure. Probably very fair. I don't know how to put a number on it, but it has this huge effect. And then, you know, for that week, if that person hadn't checked the Eruv, you know, who knows what? People kind of take it for granted, but like, no, it's very much the case of like, if you hadn't checked the Eruv, practically speaking, that means they would have had to find someone else. But that's the thing. It could be a drag to have the same couple people check the Eruv every week. Much more fun when you can spread the love and, you know, share it out more.
My name is Shlomo Schechter. I'm the OUJLIC rabbi at the University of Illinois. We arrived here in 2016. Rabbi Schrader, who's the founding director of OUJLIC, he said, among other things, one of the primary tasks that he sort of gave us is you need to build an Eruv there. So we did. The process of building the Eruv was quite involved. I was not particularly big into Eruvin or excited. When I was learning for Smicha, we did, you know, a section on Eruvin. We learned the overarching phrase that kept being used when we were doing Eruvin for Smicha was, if you're going to actually build an Eruv, you need to consult an expert. The level of detail and practical application is very different than what, you know, you read in the book. And that's what we did, that training with Rabbi Jachter in January of 17. And that was hands-on, like, here's what you need to know on a practical level. And he took us and we did some work on the computer. And then he came and we went and we spent a couple hours outside looking at the Eruv. He went and he showed us the Eruvin, you know, and he would take us to an intersection. And he would say, find the Eruv here. Where's the Eruv? And we have to look at the infrastructure that was there and find it. And so Rabbi Jachter's, one of the main messages he gave us was, don't build the Eruv, find the Eruv. Use as existing, you know, power lines and fences and natural boundaries and as much as possible, rather than saying, this is where we want the Eruv to be, now we're gonna have to go build it. Because doing it that way is going to be far more difficult in terms of getting the permits and putting up your own poles, your own wires, gonna be very much more involved. We managed to finish it over the summer and we inaugurated the Eruv in August of 17 for the fall semester of our second year here. It's not a mitzvah that everybody gets to do in their lifetime. of building and establishing an eruv. You know, there are certain mitzvot that people are accustomed to do for themselves. Mostly people are consumers of mitzvot. You buy your tefillin ready-made. You buy your tzitzis, right? We buy kosher meat. Someone has done that shechita, and we're just sort of buying it or consuming it. And so for most people, the Eruv is a mitzvah that they consume. Right? They rely on it. They are glad to have it, are appreciative of it, but they don't produce it. They mostly consume it. So this was a tremendous opportunity that when I was tasked with it, I took on full gusto, because this idea of being a producer of mitzvah is very important to me. I think that theme, that value, is of great value to me. And so when I was charged with building the Eruv, I took it on head on. And during the process of building it, it was almost an obsession. You know, it's like you from morning till night, you're thinking Eruv, Eruv, Eruv. You never look at power lines the same way again once you've built an Eruv. Everywhere you go, you're looking at the power lines. Oh, this could be a pain. You know, you can use this section, you can't use that section. You know, and you look at power lines and you think Eruv once you've been initiated into it. So I'm much more of an Eruv enthusiast now than I was when I started. But the production of mitzvot is, you know, was and still remains a very high value to me. And we have a beautiful, flourishing, very large Jewish community, and then a smaller subsection of Orthodox students. But the Orthodox students are very engaged, very involved. We have students that are helped build and oversee and check and repair when necessary the Eruv. And it's been a great tool for involving students in a way that feels really hands-on, really direct. Not everyone is so, you know, intellectual that the best way for them to connect to a mitzvah is to learn about it, you know, or to have a shiur. And for some people, I think there's a lot of people that this way, that sense of going out and doing things with your hands and being involved in the construction and the maintenance of an Eruv is really a strong connection to a Jewish, to a mitzvah that they wouldn't necessarily have had a connection to. And it's very easy to sort of just take it for granted, right? Most people, you know, when you know that there's an Eruv and the extent to your involvement is maybe checking the website to see if it's up Erev Shabbos, and not more than that. But for someone to be involved in having a section of the Eruv that they check every week, or to go, you know, we have to do all the work at night in terms of repairing things. And last week we had a situation where the power company was doing, you know, major repairs on a section of power lines, and that interfered with the Eruv. And after we sort of went and looked at, on Thursday, and said, yeah, this is a problem, we had to reroute the Eruv and use a different section of power lines. And so after Meyerv on Thursday night, a couple of students and I, we went out and we ran to Home Depot and got some lumber and did what we needed to do to reroute the Eruv. And we put up 9 lechis, you know, 9 posts. And we successfully rerouted the Eruv to bypass the section. So this is the thing that, you know, one of the students that came with me had never been involved in repairing the Eruv before. He wanted to be involved in something that he thinks is aspires to, and he sees that it's a leadership role within the community. You know, he came and participated in that. I mean, in general, I think the mitzvot, when you do them with your hands and you're involved in the doing of a mitzvah rather than sort of outsourcing it, it's a tremendous mitzvah, you know, to really be involved in doing something with your hands. And so I think this was a great opportunity to get students involved, you know, in mitzvah production, not just consumption. You know, getting involved with checking the Eruv, maintaining the Eruv is a really beautiful thing. We learn a lot of stuff in Masechet Eruvin, that some of it is not as relevant to everyday life as it was when we had Chatzerot and Mavui as part of our normal construction. And the way that our cities are laid out is not the same anymore. And an urban Eruv is a whole beast unto itself. You know, and needs a lot of understanding to be able to translate all of the intellectual material into a very practical hands-on application is not simple, you know, and it's not always the case that when you read something in the Tosafot that you understand what it's talking about on the street. But when you can learn that Tosafot and then you go outside, you know, and you see, oh, this is what it means, whatever the concept is, right? There's so many concepts in Eruvin, but to go and actually see them and say, here's the Tzuras HaPetach is really wonderful. And if that person has the opportunity to get involved in their local Eruvad, you know, and to to go and see exactly where your Eruv is, not just like, look, not the map, but the Eruv itself, you know, and to participate. Things happen, Eruvin get repaired because somebody was, when somebody's just walking, driving by, and they know what the Eruv is, and they see, and they say, oh, wait a minute, that's a problem. They get on the phone, and they tell the Rav, there's a problem with the Eruv, you know, at this, is at this in this street. And you can't do that unless you actually know the infrastructure of the Eruv. So I definitely would encourage people who have learned Eruvin, who have taken the, made the efforts in the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah, right, and to then come and help to produce the Eruv for their communities, and to see it for yourself, to know what the Eruv is physically is very important.
Hadran Alach Masechet Eruvin v'Hadrach Alan. Thanks again to everyone who shared their stories and enthusiasm with us. It was a real pleasure to hear from you all. Between episodes, you can keep up with Interleave on Facebook and Twitter. And if you like what you heard, leave us a review, subscribe, and share this with your friends. Special thanks to our executive producer, Adina Karp. Come back next time for another deep dive.